I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Altitude's undefeated. Crack rate will punch it down, whatever it was in.
Not a huge fan of it.
I didn't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and started to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure.
Hello, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Monday, September 25th, 2023. The Rapids lost 2 games last week to Cascadia teams. As a result, they are officially mathematically eliminated from the 2023 MLS Cup playoffs, or should I say contending for the playoffs. And Rabbi is currently on the rabbinical equivalent of international duty with all the various high holidays he has this week. So every single year when we've done this, we've had a different kind of call-up that we've brought in. I'm here to bring on a very good friend, an active member of the Rapids community, a highliner, and someone who's been begging to come on this podcast and yammer on for minutes without interruption, Eric Stitson. Eric, how are you?
No, I'm doing pretty good, Matt. It's an honor to be with you guys, and it's a little different on this side of the microphone.
Yeah, absolutely. Welcome to being the podcast host then, or guest on here, Eric, in which now your thoughts are being criticized rather than you yelling into the void as you hear us in your car or in your home or what have you. Eric, you're pretty active on social media. You've been a season ticket holder for 12 years, question mark. So I think most of our listeners have probably heard of your name or heard of you or are 1 or 2 degrees removed from you at most, but do you want to state your Rapids bona fides really briefly, just in case?
Sure. So you are correct. I've been a season ticket holder for my 12th year with the Colorado Rapids. I'm a frequent away Rapids fan as well. I try to make anywhere between 1 to 4 Rapids away games a year, depending upon where it is and time constraints. I've been an active member of the social community with the Rapids. You see me a lot chiming in on various platforms for my opinions. I do maintain a lot of positive relationships within the club, with members of the front office, with members of the team, a lot of other super fans. I sit in Section 119 with Mark Johnson, Pauline Perry, Megan Kavanaugh, Alan Reed. So that's where you'll find me for most home games.
Excellent stuff. And Eric, maybe you kind of got a little bit to fame I can't remember what year this would have been. It would have been like in the first month of the season at Seattle, and there was a he's not at the Athletic anymore. Matt Pence, I believe it is, who made a comment on him tracking all of the typical away support that he saw, and he made a ill-informed, ignorant, he had a bit of a hot take about that and then what it meant, and then people kind of chiming back on, and you ended up getting a hold of him, and I think that led to some content over the Athletic. Do you want to talk about that interaction other than yelling about the fact that, yeah, if Seattle had a horrible owner and played in a stadium outside and, you know, only got 13 to 15,000 people here locally, then you wouldn't be surprised that midweek on a Wednesday in a rainy Seattle that, you know, you don't get a bunch. But Erica, tell me about that interaction to the extent that you're willing to talk about it.
So that's an interesting take back to 2019. So funny story, I was actually working in Las Vegas at that time, and I managed to fly up to Seattle for the game. It was a, I believe it was a midweek game, if I remember correctly. Stayed the night in Seattle, went to the game. There were only about seven of us, and we were in Seattle. They put you in the upper section in the 300s up there in the north end. So you're looking completely away from the action. You're looking down at the crowd. The crowd is noisy below you, and you might as well be halfway to the moon at that point. So of course the Rapids did not play particularly well. I think we lost 2-0 that game. And then the very next day, flying back to Vegas, here comes Matt Pence's comments, and he was basically trying to make a point that, it was an ill-advised point that, the Rapids were not a very well-supported team on the road, and his comments kind of cut a lot of people the wrong way, to the point where you get Richard Fleming and a few others out there calling him out for his antics. And so I decided, you know, I could be that guy and just chime in and bark at him and, you know, have fun with that. But I said, you know what? He doesn't know what he doesn't know. And so I actually reached out to him via I actually had a long phone call with him after we talked initially, and kind of educated him a little bit on what it's like to be an away supporter, especially for a team like the Colorado Rapids, who do not traditionally travel well to anywhere safe, Salt Lake City or Kansas City. So it was an interesting conversation, and I did offer to help him kind of understand what it's like. And I think he actually had a good understanding, and he certainly apologized to me, which I appreciated, but It was an interesting discussion.
Good to hear. And Eric, that is one of many reasons. While we do have some hot take merchants in the Rapids community, I would say that you've always been measured, and even when you have a strong opinion, it's well based and everything. That's one of many reasons that I think you and I have gotten along so well. Why I think you're certainly a net positive for the Rapids community, and why you're on here as opposed to some other hot take merchants on who are semi-anonymous on Twitter. But Eric, let's get into it. So we'll start listeners this past Wednesday. I don't have my calendar in front of me, so what day was that? That was the 20th of September, in which the Rapids hosted Seattle Sounders and got a 2-1 loss. Leo Chu scoring in the 34th minute. Early on in the first half, it was Albert Rusnak on a header, and then Cole Bassett pulls one back in the 80th minute. Some better play from the Burgundy boys in the final 15-20 minutes, but ultimately just wasn't good enough. Eric, I'll start off with my big takeaway, and then I'll dish it to you and say whatever you want about the game of the night. This was the true barometer for me in terms of the new coach bump, how much of this was Robin's fault and everything. I think what we ultimately found out from this past week's two games is that the win over New England, to a certain extent, was a false positive. And when you play a very good team that's well-drilled and can take advantage of your weaknesses and everything, this is still very much the same old Rapids with a few individual standouts, Cole Bassett being one of them. Eric, what'd you make of the game? How was the atmosphere for a Wednesday night for you?
So the atmosphere was kind of one of those typical Wednesday night games where you just don't know what the attendance is going to be like. Certainly was not as well attended as the Saturday night game. I think the announced attendance was 12,000. It was off to my right, it was T38. Had some sort of a presence, but you could definitely hear the cranky out chants. You could definitely hear the pouring out chants, and but it was a measured response compared to last Saturday, the previous Saturday against New England. My takeaway from the game was the first half, the Rapids just did not look in sorts. They looked like they were completely out of sorts. Seattle basically could do whatever they wanted, and they pretty much did. Towards the second half, they started getting some substitutions in, and And around about the 75th minute, that's when the kind of use the term loosely, dirty challenge against Brian Galvan happened from Albert Rusinak. And that got them fired up, and that finally kind of started getting the team moving after they had been super lethargic for 75 minutes. And then finally you get the goal, I believe it was Cole Bastard who got the goal. And you could see, looking across the way to the Seattle fans, they were getting a little nervous. They could see that we were starting to surge, and they were hoping time would run out, which it did. Had the Rapids started out a little better in the second half, or had they played less lethargic, I think that could have been a very different result.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Eric. I think where it was certainly just a return to the norm for me was the really a turgid first half, first and foremost, and a first half in which the thing that I was curious to see about this, it's funny you mentioned this, Eric, so I don't know that you and I have formally discussed this, but I'm currently wearing a University of Miami alumni shirt as well, as you've been relatively open, you're an FSU fan and everything, and so, yeah, so what I thought was, for those who are not caught up on ACC football, Miami and FSU are historic rivals on a national level, and we both recently have had some big tussles with Clemson. Clemson is a shell of their usual selves. That being said, FSU goes into Death Valley this past weekend and gets their first win in, Eric, you tell me, however many years. And for me, Eric, every single time, Clemson historic more recently has been the measuring stick for the Hurricanes in the ACC. And so my usual question that I have going into it is, how many quarters, how many possessions does it take for me to think, okay, yeah, Clemson's a way better team, there's no way that Miami's winning this game? And I would say that's kind of similar to the relationship we've seen between the Rapids and between the Sounders, where it is a non-competitive blowout for Seattle, and then depending on where things are with Seattle and how they manage it, it could be a competitive game or a competitive result for the Rapids, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the Rapids blow them out. And so the question I had, Eric, going into this match was, how long does it take for me to get a gauge of which team is feeling it tonight? And that given the fact that Seattle was coming off of a really tough, I can't remember who they played on the weekend, but then for so many reasons, this was a must win with how congested the Western Conference was for them. And so I was just thinking, does Seattle come in, and then what does their lineup look like? That'll probably inform me into how seriously Smetzer's trying to win this game. I see Christian Roldan starting in this game, and I'm like, okay, they're going for the win. And in the first 15 minutes, I was like, you know, you had that near chance for, I think, Morris on the header. You had a couple good blocks as well. Ilicha, to his credit, made a couple big saves. And about 20, 30 minutes in, I was like, okay, yeah, Seattle's the better team. If they get a second goal, they're probably winning this match. And so turgid first half, just same old, same old. And if you remove the New England game and you remove the news from everything from Robin getting fired, Eric, I don't know that this team looked any different from what we saw with them before under Robin Fraser to what we've now seen under them under Chris Little, other than maybe, and we'll come on to this in a minute, is I think whatever Chris Little has been saying to Cole Bassett the last couple weeks, it has worked. I think he looks much more free. I think he's taking more onus of trying to do something with the ball. I think he's getting back to a level that we would associate him from 2021. He doesn't have a lot of help around him, obviously, which is still problematic. But, you know, as we'll get into, you know, Bassett now has 3 goal contributions in 3 games under Chris Little. So if nothing else, he's been unshackled, or he's stopped giving an F, and in that regard, he's looked better. But, you know, Bassett's opening statement in the post-game media availability we had was, you know, we didn't start playing for the first 60, 65 minutes. It was great in the final 20. I guess the question that I would have had is, if you have that from that first Seattle goal, which was, you know, Seattle scored in the 35th minute, excuse me, yes, in the 35th minute, 34th minute was Leo Chu. So in the 35th minute, Eric, the Rapids start doing that as opposed to waiting until the 65th minute, I think maybe we're talking about a very different game, but that is just a reflection of who the Rapids are at this point. Eric, are you encouraged by what Cole has been? And then in particularly as a fan, I know there's been a lot of commentary about not only his performances, but his body language and that being toxic as well. Does this look like old Cole Bassett to you?
Yes, it does look like the Cole Bassett that was in 2021, in my opinion. And it's funny we're talking about this with, in the context of Robin Fraser. I thought the team, the way they came out, they were flat. They were uninspired. They looked like they were just going through the motions. Seattle clearly came out with intent to win in the first 15 minutes. When they got that first goal, you could see the life just kind of oozing out of the team. Their confidence, what little confidence they had after the New England win, just kind of am right out of that. And then when they got the second goal, I thought it was game over at that point. I wasn't sure if the Rapids would have any kind of response. And then, like I said, they had the situation with Galvan there and Rusnak and that little dust up in the corner there. I thought that finally woke up the team and they started playing a little more to their capability. But I mean, Seattle was the better team. There's no question about that. I don't think there's any doubt that Seattle has better players. And I don't think there's any doubt that Seattle will be a playoff team, whereas we're right now fighting for relevancy. But it was positive to see Cole get that goal. And I looked over and I talked to Mark and to Megan and to Paulie, and I said, Cole is starting to look more like a little bit of a leader now. So it was a fascinating situation to watch. And then with the Portland game a few days later, it was even more on display. But if you're going to ask me my thoughts on whether this game is a reflection on Chris Little, no. I think the fact of the matter is the team is who the team is, and you could have Jose Mourinho in the locker room, and I don't think it really would have made a difference. They are who they are. Their playing style is what they play, and I just don't think anything's going to change at that point.
Jose Mourinho would make the media interactions far more interesting for me personally, Eric, but it would make it more eventful. I don't think it would make it more enjoyable. Chris Little's been an absolute peach and a consummate professional and wonderful in my interactions with him as well. So I guess just the last thing that I'll say on this, Eric, this was a reality check for me. I think the win against New England was, I think, just great, kind of like I think I said this in my recap on Burgundy Wave, that it was a cathartic night for people in the stands, or people who left the stands rather, and then for the players as well. And then the thought was, what came next? And so my thought, I said this to Sounder at Heart when we did the joint three question previews with them and everything, of we're going to learn what this new Rapids team, or if this is a new Rapids team, this week with the two games against Cascadia teams that desperately need a result. And while I think there was certainly an improvement from Seattle to Portland in terms of the response coming more urgently, the fact is this is a team that does not start games well. This is a team that gives up the first goal, and this is a team that is too soft defensively, and that seems to happen regardless of the personnel involved. Eric, you and I spoke privately about everything that went on around the game in New England and the protests and everything. I should point out, Eric, you and Megan were both wearing black for Jameson night against New England. You did not walk out with the group that obviously exited through 117, and there's been a lot of discourse about the how many people left 117 but then stayed in the stadium or watched at the top of the concourse or moved into 118. No One Good FC has some pretty good photos before and after that show that 118 is more full, say, in the 30th minute than it was in the 20th minute when the exodus started and everything. But the question I then had, Eric, is then what this looked like going forward. Obviously, it's hard to judge a midweek game. I'd say that 117 and 118 were maybe 40% full. There was a fair bit of black, as you mentioned. You heard a fair bit of the same chanting that we saw against New England Revolution that I saw for the Rapids 2 game as well. I did not personally hear Porik out on Wednesday, or fire Porik, excuse me. But Eric, what have you made of the protest interactions and what that looks like as someone who's partially participated, and as C38 continues to contemplate its relationship and its dialogue, the open dialogue that is going on with the club, I'll say.
Wow, you handed me a big one there. So I think for context purposes, I supported the protests. I think that C38 has had an interesting relationship since 2013 when they were merged from Pitt Army Bulldogs and Class 6. And full disclosure, I first started being a season ticket holder in 2011 as a member of Pitt Army. So I was hanging out there in the Northeast Terraces with everybody. But since they merged with C38 in 2013, there's been some interesting dialogues and protests when the team was not playing well, which has happened frequently. There was the infamous letter that came out, I believe it was in 2017, and I took exception to that letter. I thought that letter was not very well written. I thought it was very short-sighted. I thought it did not represent the club nor represent the group very well. And I took no exception to that. And something the listeners will learn about me is I have an opinion and I have no problem sharing it. And I'll stand by it, whether it's over a document or it's to your face. I have no problems with it. But this protest was different in the sense that you could tell that the way the two pressers that rapport Smith had with you and the rest of the Rapids media, it just left a very hollow feeling amongst all the fans that, okay, you're doing this, you're saying this, but there's absolutely no follow through and no acceptance that you play a part in any of this. And then when the question, I believe you asked it about Josh Kroenke's involvement, and Josh Kroenke, did he even show up to the stadium that year? And Poring looked a little bit taken aback by that question. And he openly admitted that Josh had not been to the stadium at all this year. I think that a lot of the fans, I think C38, and I'm not speaking for C38, of course, but I think a lot of the fans were just taken aback by, okay, the team is in last place. It's been from 2021 to what it is now, a shell of itself, and the owner can't even be bothered to show up. The stadium's falling apart. The Jumbotron is running butt of jokes all over the place. The seats don't work. The locker, the stalls and the bathrooms don't lock. Something's got to change. And so I think this time C38 learned its lesson and came up with a very appropriate protest. I think the black was a great way to signify it. I think the walkout was fair. I know that's not universally shared amongst our group, but I thought the walkout was fair. I think the banners hung in its place was appropriate. And I know there was concern about, well, how the players would feel about it. And my take is, these guys are professional athletes. These guys are getting paid millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars to do a job. And if they can't handle a fan protest at what's going on and off the pitch, they really shouldn't be playing professional sports at all. Mm-hmm. They need to maybe look at something different. But in my view, I thought the protests were fair. Whether or not the protests continue or not, that's, I've had conversations with some of the C38 leaders, what their plans are moving forward. But in my opinion, they have to keep going with it, because if they don't, Kroenke will just simply wait them out. I guess time will tell what will be the next step for them.
Yeah, a few things that I probably should have said at the top as well, listeners. Eric, again, is here speaking as an individual, not necessarily on behalf of C38 leadership. His views don't necessarily reflect that of Holding the High Line either, as well, in that regard. But Eric, I think those are all very measured takes. And I think it's still an interesting question for a lot of fans. How do we protest ownership and show that that's not taking a shot at the players? From all the every single interview that I've done with a player at this point, with the exception of, I forgot to ask Andrew Gutman on yesterday. No, we're talking on Monday, Eric. So two nights ago when I spoke to Andrew Gutman after the Portland Timbers game, that slipped my mind. But obviously talking about how swollen his ankle was and whether or not Felipe Mora should have been still on the field was a more relevant discussion topic. But every single other player who I've met with, I've asked about their thoughts on the protests, and they seem to clearly understand that that's not directed at them, or it's not in venom towards them or in vain towards them. And every single one of them has gone on to say, all that we can do is control what we can control. And in that regard, we can win for fans and then bring them some joy, whether they're in the stands, whether they leave the game early, or whether they're watching from home, or whether they're not watching as well. And I think that's been the healthy approach. So to Erica, to any other fans that feel that it's not the players, as far as I understand, with the four or five that I've spoken to now, and certainly with Chris Little, is that the players didn't, and the coaching staff did not see you walking out on them or abandoning the club in the 20th minute against New England, and the continued wearing of black, the banners, and the various protest chants that we've seen are not necessarily seen as them expressing that they've given up their support of the people on the field actually wearing the crest. Let's move on. Yes.
And Matt, if I may just comment on that very briefly. I think that, you know, the question that I keep hearing all the time about the protests is, well, what would be the protest if the Rapids were winning? And I think that's a very fair question to ask, because there's this adage in sports, and I used to be an athlete, I used to be a coach, and the adage is winning cures all ills. If your team is winning and you're in the postseason and you're in the playoffs and you're fighting for trophies, a lot of these issues that have all of a sudden bubbled to the surface probably would be very muted at best, if not non-existent. So I think that we have to take into context not just the stadium issues, interacting with Kroenke and with the front office, but also the results on the pitch. I think that's, I don't see how you can separate one from the other. I really don't.
Absolutely. And I do think that part of why we've gotten to this point, Eric, is because it's gotten so bad and because you don't feel that it's getting or it will get better as well. And so that's led to, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures in that regard. But I think, I don't remember who I've said this to because I've had so many conversations with it. You know, if new coach comes in and they have new energy and the team is fighting for a playoff spot or even mid-table, I think a lot of this dies down. So I think, unfortunately, for those wanting to see like real ownership or front office level change and then more of an emotional connection on that side, I think there's a lot of, I think it's a valid question at this point, Eric, whether or not Stan knows what's going on. I have been told by people in the know that Josh was very involved in the statement that his name was put on in response to the letter as well. So the fans that, and again, all of this is part of the issue we have here, Eric, is that we don't hear from ownership directly. And so most of the people who I hear from about what someone from ownership says is someone within the front office. And so I think increasingly what was telling for so many Rapids fans in the various press conferences that we've had with Pork is the only time we hear about what Josh or Stan are doing is when we ask someone what they're doing and are we getting a filtered version of the truth. And Eric, you did say that that I asked the question about Josh's attendance at the stadium. Just for the sake of completeness and the sake of correction, it was Pat Radigan from Footy at 5280 who got to that question before I did. But in any case, Eric, let's get on to the game on the weekend in which the Colorado Rapids lost at Portland Timbers by a score of 3-2. Brian Acosta playing his former team, Noah Vander in for the Portland Timbers, and six changes from the starting lineup, only one we believe to be from injury, as Rafael Navajo has been listed as out, or he was questionable going into the game and then eventually out with a lower body injury. Anthony scores on an open hitter on the back post in the 19th minute. Great passing in a 1-2 situation that sees Moreno go through the Rapids defense to make it 2-0. Diego Rubio responds immediately with an emphatic header set up by Cole Bassett. A minute later, Andrew Gutman scores off a deflected shot in the 43rd minute after sustaining that foul from Felipe Mora, with him getting a touch to the ball, and then the follow-through leads to a pretty decent stomp on Gutman's ankle. Chris Little described that as a contusion after the game and said that it was pretty swollen. Gutman had to be subbed off at halftime. So what, the foul occurred in what, maybe the 40th minute? Gutman scores in the 43rd, and then 4 minutes of stoppage time, 2 minutes of regular time later, Gutman's night ends. And then that same Felipe Mora scores on a breakaway in the 71st minute after some pretty poor headers by Andreas Maxu and Lalas Abubakar, and then Danny Wilson and Andreas not able to catch up to him. I'll throw it to you first, Eric. Where do you want to start? What sticks out from you for this game?
Well, I thought that the Rapids played better against Portland than against Seattle. I think that the two goals that we gave up in the first half, those were just very, very poor marking, very poor defensive efforts, a lot of ball watching, especially on the first goal. You know, the second goal was just a great goal. There are times where in this league you have some players who make some quality shots, and you have to tip your cap to it, whether you're on the right end or the wrong end. I did like the response immediately from Cole Bassett with that sick cross that caught Diego Rubio right on the header from the goal. It was one of those just chef's kiss goals. And it's like, where was that all season? That was the first thing I asked. Where was that all season? I thought that the second half was a little bit more lethargic. I thought that they just didn't respond as well. And then the game-winning goal for Portland came off of a Maxu effort that I'm sure he wishes he had back. That was not a very good header at all. And then finds to Lawless. Lawless misplays it, and off he goes to the races for the winning goal. Same story, same results in Portland. We struggled to get results in Portland. But I think that there were some positives to take away from it. But in the whole, it's still, this is a results-based business, and you have to get points on the road. Whether it's we had one point in the bag and we let that one get away, it just felt like same old, same old.
Mm-hmm. I want to highlight some individuals as well. Eric, you mentioned it. Just again, another, I think, decent performance for Cole Bassett. I don't know what it is that Eric Little has said to him individually, but regardless of the chaos that's going on around him, like, he's not given up in this regard. So, that's been nice to see that he's taken some ownership of the failures and everything, especially now that Robin Fraser's gone. Diego Rubio, great for him to score. It was Eric, it was Rubio's first goal from the run of play for the first team since that winner he had back in April against Sporting Kansas City. It's his first goal since the July 31st game against Toluca, and the only other game that he scored for the club was the MLS Next Pro game that you and a few other season ticket holders were in the Nobo for the first time to interact with that, and he had a nice little bend in set in by Rafael Navajo. Those are the four goals that Diego Rubio scored for the Rapids organization. At this point, folks, only three for the first team and only two in actual MLS play. So good to see Rubio get the start. Good to see him score as well. I'm increasingly, Eric, I get hit up regularly from Chilean national team fans or Colo Colo fans or Chilean Americans constantly asking my take on Diego Rubio's future. I'm increasingly uncertain. It's great to see him score and everything, but the injuries are a concern, the age is a concern, and with him being eligible for MLS free agency, I think at some point somebody's going to dangle money in front of him that I don't know the Rapids can afford to or reasonably can expect to expend. That being said, we've seen that Rubio usually has one down year, one up year, one injured year, one really good year, and so I don't know that they can't afford to lose him, but they also can't afford to pay him if, like, this is his ceiling at this point. And I could totally see him, Eric, take a pay cut, go play for LAFC, be off the bench, and absolutely rock it next year and win a trophy. And I really don't want to have to see that. And then Andrew Gutman, who, obviously got officially his first goal for the club. We had a nice chuckle in the media availability afterwards. Eric, I don't know, the other goal contribution he has was the, it was an assist to Kevin Cabral against Nashville in Leagues Cup as well. And he joked, eventually one of these is going to go in without a deflection. He did say, nice for me to get credit for this one, which I think is, I don't think that's a dig against Kevin Cabral, but yeah, certainly. We know who did the work on that goal against Nashville as well. And for him to do it in the response, given what had happened to him, you know, just 2 minutes earlier, was absolutely fantastic. One interesting kind of quote that we saw from that I got from Gutman afterwards, Eric. He had not seen the replay at the time, so he didn't want to comment on it. Okay, I guess let's start with this, Eric. I generally, when it comes to officiating, I trend towards the more conservative decision of I have to be more convincingly proven that something is a red card as opposed to a yellow card, something is a penalty in the area, that kind of a thing. So naturally, I will say a red card changes the game, a penalty changes the game. I naturally, compared to, I think, other people in American soccer, have a higher threshold in that regard. So with that said, I see the foul and I see it in slow-mo, and Mora is reaching for the ball. I think the ball is clearly a 50-50, and Mora does get the ball, and then only in the follow-through then gets Andrew Gutman. On that, for my own Matt Pollard running pro, that is a yellow card for me. I can completely understand the fan that looks at that and says, simply based on the point of contact and the fact that it studs, and albeit with hindsight that Andrew Gutman had to be subbed out, someone says that that's a red card. This is not a hill I'm going to die on. Eric, what do you think?
So I watched the play, and then I watched the replays consistently. And so for me, if they had called a red card, I wouldn't have had a problem with it. They called it a yellow card. They did go VAR it, so there was some discussion. They went and looked after VAR for quite some time, and then they stuck with the ruling on the field. My initial thought was, okay, he did get the ball, but you are still responsible for the player safety aspect on the pitch. And when you go into a player with studs, whether you get the ball or not, if you injure the guy, you're responsible for that. So, as a Rapids fan, I would have loved to have seen that been a red card. It would have changed the game, of course. I know there were several of my fellow fans who felt that was a red card, but I looked at it from the standpoint of, okay, the referee, it's a 50-50 call. It's going to, if he goes for the red, he's changing the game. He's getting himself in the middle of it when the video evidence was not clear and obvious error. And that's the threshold in soccer, is clear and obvious error. For me, I was okay with the yellow card, but if they had called red, I wouldn't have had a problem with it. It certainly was not a nice one. It certainly was it's not a foul that you would want to ever take as a soccer fan or as a soccer player, because those are going to hurt and it's going to leave damage. So I can see it going both ways, but they left it as a yellow card. I'd have been fine if it had gone red.
Yeah, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on the socials, listeners, with your own opinion. We're happy to hear you out, and I've been wrong before on these officiating calls. One of many reasons why I'm not a referee working for Pro Eric, but response from Andrew Gutman after that about what he thought about that, quote, how the player reacted to it, it shows a lot about who he is. I'm frustrated with that. It hurts a lot, referring to his ankle, and how the opposing player handled it is not great at all. I have no respect for that. End quote. Eric, I'll just, this is just off the top of my head, so maybe I'm misremembering moments that would be counter to this as well. Portland can be a little bit chippy, and I've seen this before where they've made hard tackles, and the way that they've reacted has not necessarily been in the best support, sporting approach in that regard. And then I think it's the MLS scriptwriters were on one with this particular plot, Eric, with the it's Mora who ends up scoring the winning goal. So to your point as well, the fact that eliminates the Rapids, don't get me wrong, it was three goals that were absolutely preventable. The fact that the Rapids don't start playing till the 30th minute was disappointing. The fact that they dropped off was also disappointing. I'm not sure. I'm having a hard time remembering, Eric, when's the last time the Rapids actually put in a full 90-minute shift. It's been a long time. I'm not sure it's happened this season now that I think about it, excluding the Open Cup games against lower division opposition. But, you know, you look at that to where if that call goes the other way, I think in reality, we're probably talking right now about a Rapids win and then potentially them saving whatever's left of their playoff contention as well. And then to that point, Eric, I'll get another quote from Gutman that I thought was insightful that I think is maybe not saying a quiet part out loud, but I think we can infer it, where I asked him about whether or not he thinks the context was in his short time at the club, the fact that the team has not started great, has responded, that response has always been late. His thought on the fact that, you know, they were down 2-0 by the 30th minute, and then effectively it was a tie game 13 minutes later. And to see that response from key players like himself and like Rubio, is that encouragement that the club's headed in the right direction given those changes? So here's his entire response to that. Quote, when you're in this league, you have to play like this every game, as in with that level of intensity. You can't have games where it takes you 75 minutes to get into the game, or you have a good spell of 10 minutes, but the rest of the game is poor. If you're a professional player, you have to play 90 minutes to the best of your ability every single game. Otherwise, you're not going to be in this league very long. There's a lot of young guys on the team that are struggling their way through understanding that, but I have to give them credit because a lot of them don't give up, and you can see that. They have a bad performance and then they bounce back and they have a good performance. As long as that continues to go well, I'm happy with where the team is heading, end quote. I agree with the general trend that he says, Eric. I'd want to know names that he's referring there, because we've seen, while I think Ralph Prizo in his two substitute appearances was decent, I do think he is at fault in one of the goals given up against Portland. I think he's a defensive liability, and in that regard, I don't think he can start. I'm wondering what other young players that he's referring to in that regard. We've seen a lot of inconsistency. Maybe he's referring to that in a training context, but I think it's fair to say at this point, Eric, I'm not sure there's a young player on the team outside of Moise Bombito who has improved between the start of the season and now. The fact that those players are maybe learning those lessons and Gutman is maybe a veteran who's showing them that way gives me some hope for the future, but that's maybe just another little insight in ways in which this team is just still not right on so many levels.
Yeah, and I think you bring up an interesting point there about who, when I read that quote, my first thought is, who was he talking about? I mean, if he's referring to Bombito, if he's referring to Cole Bassett, okay, I can sort of see that. Bombito's got a lot of upside, and Bassett just got back from Europe, so okay. But if you're referring to Prizo, no. If you're referring to some of the other younger guys like Calvin Harris, these guys all have upsides. So, I mean, I was wondering, who is he talking about?
I'll retract my previous statement. I would put Calvin Harris. I put Calvin Harris and Bombito. I think both have gotten better from the start of the season to now. But continue.
My thought on it is that, look, we are now officially eliminated from the playoffs. And so there's going to be a clamor to play the kids. Now, one of the criticisms I will have of Robin Frazier is he never really, in my opinion, never really took a liking to Rapids 2 or to any of the players, save a couple that, you know, came off and got on the bench, maybe saw a few minutes, but I don't think he ever really had a whole lot of trust in them, simply because I think he was comfortable with 15, 16 players, 17 players that he always liked to go with because those were his guys. He felt comfortable with them. And then the other day, you wonder why they all got hurt, why everybody's injured, why Jack took another injury. It's not just because the Rapids are cursed. I mean, there's a reason for this. And that generally is because Robin had a penchant for playing certain players a lot. And, you know, in this league, the minutes are going to catch up with you, whether you like it or not. And I don't think Rapids 2 was something he really took a lot of liking to. Now, bringing in Ralph Prizzo, that's a questionable one because of the trade with Mark Anthony Kay. You want to see what this kid can do. Okay, I get it. But you also have kids like Ali LaRaz. You also have kids like Calvin Harris. You also have kids like Darren Yapi. At some point, you got to find out what your kids can do. And I just it was a little surprising to hear that point.
Yeah, we'll get into Rapids 2 in a little bit, Eric, but anything else we want to say about the two games that were played, or shall we look ahead to the home double game week this week?
The results were expected. I wasn't terribly surprised. The only things, like I said, that were surprising was that the team is finally starting to show signs of life that has been missing for the 2025 games this season, that they just didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's move on. This coming Wednesday, September 27th, the Rapids will be hosting the Vancouver Whitecaps. Eric, the Caps and Vanni Sartini did not have a very vibesy week last week. They got schlacked 4-1 to Houston midweek. They were on two road games as well. So I don't know. Eric, you're the person who works in airline travel as well. Would they be doing charters across this, or potentially have the Caps? Are the Caps going to be south of their border for 10 days between Houston last Wednesday, RSL on Saturday, and then Colorado on Wednesday?
That's a good question. So, yes, they'll do charters. I think darn near all the flights nowadays involving MLS teams do charters now, or they have their own aircraft in the case of, say, New England Revolution, because they're using the Patriots planes. My sense tells me that they will fly in on Tuesday night for the game. They will fly in here to Denver International, and then they will stay. They'll play the game, and then they're going to have their next game. They'll stay here. They won't go back to Canada. And the reason I say that is because you go back to the pandemic days when they had to stay in the United States and they couldn't go back to Canada because Canada was locked down. So they're kind of accustomed to it in a sense. So they have a protocol for it. So my gut sense is they'll stay for two, maybe three games, and they'll stay training. They'll train somewhere, and then they'll go back after the road trip is over.
Okay. So in any case, they lost two six-pointers against fellow playoff contending teams as well. They sit seventh in the Western Conference. I have to think that they're looking at this game as a must-win. For those of you who've not looked at the table, because it's just depressing to see the Rapids at the bottom of everybody else, outside of St. Louis locking up a playoff spot with 53 points, Eric, it is an absolute logjam. LAFC and Seattle are tied, or I guess second and third. I don't know where it's goal difference is probably the tiebreaker there, are second and third on 45 points. And then you have to go just 7 points down to find Sporting Kansas City in 38. You've got two more teams on 43 points. Portland's on 42. Vancouver's in seventh on 41. They have a tiebreaker on San Jose, who's also on 41, and Dallas on 39. Teams have between 3 and 5 games left, depending on their games played as well. It is an absolute logjam, and even just one result at this stage in the season could potentially be the difference between having a home playoff game and potentially being one more result away from missing the playoffs entirely. So, yeah, I think Vancouver's looking at this as a game that they have to win, Eric. They're probably looking at this as their most winnable game that they have the rest of the season. I'll just go through some of their personnel as well. Since last time the Rapids were scheduled to play the Vancouver Whitecaps, they have jettisoned Julian Gressel over to Columbus Crew. It's been Ryan Gauld and Brian White who've been playing up top for them, and they've recently brought in Richie Laria, who's more of their wingback that they have. They're playing a 3-1-4-2, according to MLSsoccer.com's formation chart they have as well. So, Eric, that's a weird one even for Football Manager, let alone FIFA as well. Eric, what do we see in the Caps, and how much of this just feels like a dooming game of, oh, team that's overall talented, that's better than the Rapids, that has had a couple tough results as well, here, play Slump Busters FC, get a comfortable 2-1 win?
As far as Vancouver's concerned, yeah, it's must-win for them. They have to come in and they have to get 3 points. There's just no way around it. When you come in and you're playing a team at the bottom of the table and a team that's struggling to find identity, a team that's struggling to score, who has defensive miscues, yeah, you have to come in and take advantage of those. You can't just do what they did in the first game up in Vancouver. I believe that was back in May, where both teams struggled to score. Both teams were trying to find chances. Both teams couldn't figure out an identity. I think it ended up as a scoreless draw in that game. But no, I expect it's going to be Vancouver probably will come in and they'll hang an early one on us and we'll be playing from behind again. I do suspect, however, the Rapids will find some fight in this week game, because this is an opponent that's a little closer to us in style than some of the other ones, like, say, Houston's upcoming or Dallas. And it wouldn't surprise me if it's a draw. But yeah, I think Vancouver's going to make it 3 points. That's just the end of it.
Yeah, I think one thing that'll be interesting to see, Eric, I forgot a couple questions as well when we had post-game media availability. I didn't mention this earlier when we were talking about the Portland game, but there were 6 changes between the lineup between Wednesday and Saturday for Chris Little, only one of them, which was plausibly an injury. But you had Sidney Tavares, who was subbed out again against Seattle with sickness, and he wasn't even in the lineup at all. But he was also not listed on the injury as well. And then there were 4 other rotations. You had Lawless, Abubakar, and Danny Wilson were in at center back. There was a formation change as well. And then it was Ralph Parisseau and Danny Leyva as well in the midfield. So to your point, Eric, of kind of questioning like the, at what point does Chris Little think, let's build towards next season? Because obviously there's nothing to fight for at this point. How much more squad rotation do we see within the team? Or was this kind of always the plan that they were going to be a little bit more aggressive from a personnel standpoint against Seattle and then trying to be a little more conservative with 3 center backs on the field against Portland? So I am curious to see, do we see more of that? How much more data do we have on there? Or at what point, Eric, given what we both have talked about with the potential disconnect between Robin Fraser and Porrick Smith, is maybe Porrick having, is he tipping his hand a little bit more on the scale in terms of here's what we want to see, just given that the season now is kind of lost, is going to be interesting to see. So that's something that I'm kind of curious about as well. And I guess we'll come onto this as well, Eric. Rapids 2 got a dramatic win over Minnesota United 2 on the weekend. And with that, they officially clinched the top seed in the MLS Next Pro playoffs. There's no formal supporter shield, folks, but they did just barely eke out Crown Legacy, who are Charlotte FC's MLS Next Pro affiliate, tied on points. But then Rapidos has a better goal difference, and it was a hat trick with goals in stoppage time by Remy Cabral as well. Eric, Marlon Vargas and Yosuke Hanya both have exhausted their 4, I can't remember what the terminology they have. It's like, I think it's like emergency short-term call-up. I can't remember what that designation is, but that allows you to then be available for 4 first-team games. I think it's regardless of competition, because there was an Open Cup game that Marlon started, and I think Yosuke was on a bench for as well. I might be completely mixing this up, but in any case, Eric, Remy Cabral still has availability in this regard. I don't believe, since he's a contracted first-team player, that that's something that's applicable to Sebastian Anderson, Mike Edwards, Abubakar Keita, or certainly a captain, Ollie LaRoz, as well. I think that's an option where potentially you could have Adam Beaudry on the bench, though I think in that case, I think the better argument for me personally in this situation, Eric, would be to give Abroad a start over Illich. But what do we see from a personnel standpoint? And given that we don't yet have the schedule for the MLS Next Pro playoffs, I want to believe that the first round will be this weekend. Rapids did get a bye, so then I think the earliest they would probably play is the weekend of October 9th or October 1st. I, again, don't have the calendar in front of me. Yes, it'd be the weekend of October 7th, October 8th that you would see. Eric, these next 2-3 games, given that it's Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, do we want to see our 2 guys? At what point does the game not matter? We have proof that Rapids 1 guys go down to MLS Next Pro and don't win games as well. Do we give a bunch of these kids an opportunity? Or maybe to your point earlier, was Robin Fraser right that maybe there's just a large gap to where these kids haven't gotten minutes that when previously we were clamoring for it?
That's an interesting question, Matt. And I've got 2 thoughts on this. For one, Rapids 2 has something to play for. So in my eyes, giving these guys at Rapids 2 who are fighting for an MLS Next Championship, trying to clamor in there, giving them first team minutes, I see the point, but I think as long as Rapids 2 has something to play for, I think they need to stay focused on what they're doing as opposed to worrying about getting on the first team. Having said that, you know what you're going to get from the first team. You know what's been going on. You know who your players are. You know how they're reacting. We have seen Ollie LaRaz a little bit. We have seen, Edwards once this year. I think we've seen Seti at least on the bench, but I can't remember Seti got in the game or not. Last time I think we saw Rodriguez was in Portland last year after, the injury what happened to,
Yarbrough.
Yeah. And so I just, as long as Rapids 2 has something to play for, I don't see Rapids 2 being interfered with. Now, could that change? Yeah, you just don't know. I mean, there's a lot of games, there's a lot of congestion. But I also think that, I just think that the Rapids need to look at how they're using their minutes, not necessarily who's using their minutes. One of my big gripes with Robin Fraser is that he never really used his subs in a way that was meaningful, that was predictable. He was just, he would play, and then when he felt like throwing a guy in, he would throw a guy in, and it made no sense. So I think that Chris Little's going to probably be a little bit more managing the minutes, but I just don't see Rapids 2 getting in the mix unless they don't have something to play for.
I think I agree with you, Eric. I think as much as maybe some Rapids fans are going to be upset or clamoring for that, I could see you giving an opportunity to one or two guys if it's easy from a roster standpoint. But, you know, what was the Mitch Carroll over from DNVR had a really hilarious tweet. So, Remy Cabral, Eric, had 19 goals in MLS Next Pro League play. And so if you transition that out, Remy's brother, Kevin Cabral, who's making $1.6 million in guaranteed compensation, albeit only half of that from the Rapids, he has had a goal every 542 minutes for the senior team. Remy Cabral scores a goal every 74 minutes. So I could see one or two of those guys. I could see one of the guys, especially if it's a contracted homegrown, getting a start but then not playing 90 minutes in this week. I could see guys getting bench minutes as well. But I think I agree with you. If you've got an opportunity to win a trophy, particularly with what they've done, I think they absolutely deserve that. I think the better question would be, let's wait till both seasons are over and then have the exit interviews. And at this point, the question that you're asking for our two guys that are contracted for next year is whether or not you're inviting them to the start of first team camp to potentially compete for MLS, an MLS contract. I would apply that to Yosuke Hanya. I want to say Remy Cabral, but I wonder how much he is a speed merchant once you get to the actual MLS level. Certainly a Marlon Vargas I would throw into that conversation as well. And maybe at that point, Eric, by the time we're doing exit interviews, we know who the next Rapids head coach is going to be. And maybe he's potentially in position where he's interviewing or even been hired in time to watch a few of those final playoff games that hopefully Rapids 2 are winning at home. And then maybe he's having those conversations directly with them, or he's watched their highlight reel. Hey, this is what I really like from you. This is what I need to see from you from an offseason standpoint. If you do X, Y, and Z, then that'll get you an easy invite into the first team training camp. And then if you do A, B, and C, once you're there as well, you're fighting for an opportunity with the first team. Eric, I think we both have a loss on Wednesday. Yes.
Yes, I think it's going to probably be 2-1 Vancouver.
Okay. And then let's move on to the, Saturday cap that we have Saturday, September 30th, Colorado Rapids again back at home at the Richard, and they're taking on Austin FC. This game was a 1-1 draw in a wild game that the Rapids actually outplayed Austin. Maybe that was the 90-minute performance that I was trying to think of earlier, Eric, when they should have won that game. But Brad Stuver was St. Stuver, as he often is. And so this is an Austin team that's kind of down in the dumps, Eric. They've got, let me look up the standings here. They have 4 games left. That's relatively low by MLS Western Conference team standards. And they're on 35 points, so they're 4 points below. They do not play a game midweek, so they'll be on full rest, unlike the Rapids against Vancouver, who will both be on short rest tonight. And the Rapids will be on short rest relative to Verde and Black on the weekend. Sebastian Driussi is still a really good player. Alexander Ring is still a really good player, Eric. Ragone, I think, is Austin's equivalent of Kevin Cabral in terms of DP expectations and ultimately not putting it through. But I think any hope that Austin has of making the playoffs or Chris Wolf even saving his job is probably comes down to this game. Should be pointed out, folks, that there was a rain-soaked rain delay for Austin yesterday at time of recording against the LA Galaxy, and they were up 3-1, and they gave up a goal in the 89th and the 90th minute plus 4. Michael Barrios scoring against Austin to get a 3-3 draw as well. So, Eric, Austin is a team that's capable of starting games well. They don't necessarily finish them well. I think this is a game the Rapids can get something out of it. Who knows where their heads are at this point? I'll just say a 1-1 draw for right now. I think a lot of I reserve the right to change my mind depending on the lineup and what happens on Wednesday, certainly. But Eric, I think this is the, from a wooden spoon standpoint, this I think is the only viable win the Rapids have left on the schedule.
No, I agree with you, Matt. I think this is a winnable game. I think the biggest challenge that I would suggest with the Rapids is which Rapids team is going to show up. Is this a Rapids team that's going to come out flying and get that first goal in the first 20 to 25 minutes and keep Austin at bay? Or are we going to see more of the same where they're disorganized, they're disjointed, they're lethargic, and Austin goes and hangs two on them really quickly? We just don't know. I certainly think that coming off a short rest, it's going to be kind of comes down to who Chris Little puts in the squad on Saturday versus who starts on Wednesday. I certainly think that against a team like Austin, you have to run the snot out of them. You can't just build out of the back slowly. You can't try and possess. You've got to get turned into a trap because Austin, they have the weapons, but they don't finish well. So use that altitude to your advantage. I actually have Austin losing to the Rapids 3-1. Coming up on Saturday.
Okay. Eric, put a name on the three goals.
Assuming that there's no injuries, I think Cabral finally gets something other than a tap-in. His last goal was a tap-in against Austin. I think he finally gets off the schneid. I think Gutman will get another one, provided he's healthy. And I could see Rubio getting another one, and it might be one of those, either it's a penalty or it's one of those comes off the against the run of play, and he just goes down there one-on-one to keep the Queen.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to stick with my 1-1 draw on this one, but I agree with you, Eric. I think this is the most winnable game, and if there's one where the Rapids are going to win a game by multiple goals, I think it's certainly this one. We'll see how the midweek fixtures. There's some other games being played. I think is it RSL versus LAFC? Let me look up the schedule right here. So it's Miami versus Houston. Oh, that's the Open Cup final. And then Philly versus Dallas. So I guess the two league games that you have, on Wednesday are both affecting Houston's playoff chances because Dallas are the last team in from a playoff standpoint as well. So if Dallas ends up winning that game, what would that do in terms of the point difference for Austin? That would put Dallas on 42. So then it would be San Jose on 41. So Austin would go from being 4 points below the line to 6 points below the line. And that's with them just having four games left to play. So that's certainly big. I agree with you, Eric. I think it's a question of two teams that are distinctly flawed and then who shows up with the intensity and actually executes in that regard. If one team puts up a 90-minute performance and the other one does it, I think we both know who's going to win that one. But from now that the Rapids are out of the playoffs, the only thing that we're really looking at is the wooden spoon at this point. I think the only team that the Rapids are plausibly catching in the supporter shield is Toronto FC, who are also on 22, points, and they are also eliminated from the playoffs as well. So here's the remaining schedule for all of these teams. It should be pointed out the Vancouver game, folks, is the Rapids game in hand. So the Rapids have 5 games left, and Toronto has 4 games left at time of recording. So Rapids host Vancouver, host Austin. They're at Dallas, who I just mentioned are a bubble team. At Houston, will have played an Open Cup final at that point and are competing for playoff seeding. And then lovely, of course, for the MLS schedulers to put RSL at DSG on decision day. And then Toronto's schedule, they are hosting Cincinnati. That's not great. They're at Charlotte, who are very fallible and beatable. They're at New York Red Bulls. Who knows what Red Bulls are at this point? And they're hosting Orlando, who I think should be a top playoff team as well. So the Rapids have one more game in hand. Toronto have 2 away games, 2 home games. Colorado have 3 home games, 2 away games. But I would argue after the Austin game, Eric, I think the next two most winnable games for either of these teams are probably Toronto at Red Bull and Toronto at Charlotte, I think. And then you look at it at Dallas. The Dallas has to be looking at that thinking we have to win that game. Houston's competing for playoff seeding. They have to win that game. I have a hard time seeing with how much congestion there is in the table that by the time we get to decision day that RSL has effectively a dead rubber where they're not even competing for seeding at this point. You know, if they did have a dead rubber, I could see Pablo Mascherani maybe doing his former club a a service of calling off the dogs, or they, like, let's manage it to win it, but not have it look embarrassing, Eric. I don't know. I don't know that I see a result in the final three games for the Rapids. I think at most you're looking at 1 point. So if you're looking at not winning the Wooden Spoon, it has to be this week. And I think it's going to take more than 3 points for the rest of the way, Eric. And in that regard, they have to win one of these. 4 points this week, and I think I would comfortably say they could not win the Wooden Spoon. But I don't think that's going to happen in that regard. Eric, how do you handicap the Wooden Spoon race? Or are you already assuming that you have it in your hands to use in the kitchen?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, I just don't think the schedule is in the Rapids' favor. I don't. I mean, I see the only game that's maybe winnable is Austin. And that one, even I'm kind of not sure what we're going to get out of it. Vancouver, they're fighting for a playoff spot. Dallas, fighting for a playoff spot. Houston, upper third of the conference, fighting for seeding. And then you got Salt Lake, and, you know, it'd be nice if Pablo remembered that this is his club that he made a legend out of, but I see Pablo going after us, and he's not going to hold back. He's going to take it a little personally for what happened here, understandably so, and I think it's going to be a bloodbath on decision day. So do I think the Rapids could dodge the Wooden Spoon? Yes. 1 to 4 points, possibly. Realistically, no. I'd like to say that we can win against Austin. That's a possibility, but beyond that, unfortunately, I think the Wooden Spoon is going to be in Colorado's hands, and it's going to go right to Porg Smith.
Yeah, no, I've been saying it for weeks now, Eric. You know, until further notice, listeners, I am predicting the Rapids will win the Wooden Spoon, and anything less than 4 points. Well, I'll say if they get a win this week, I'll reevaluate. So if they get 3 points this week, I will automatically reevaluate. I'll bring it up again next time Mark and I podcast next week. But if they get 2 points and then I don't say anything after that, assume that I have not changed my view in that regard. I think that does it for us as far as all the talk that we wanted to have as well. Or Eric, have you been paying attention too much to MLS Next Pro? Do we think can Rapids 2 win whatever that trophy is?
You know, it's funny we talk about Rapids 2 in the same context that Rapids 1. It's hard to imagine how a team like Rapids 2 is competing for a trophy while Rapids 1 is competing for a Wooden Spoon in the same year. Yes, I think Rapids 2 can win the trophy. I think they can win the championship. I think they can win out. They've got everything going for them. They've got the home field, I do believe. So, yeah, I think they could do it. As far as Rapids 1 is concerned, I think the Wooden Spoon is going to be coming to Colorado. And then the question is, what do we do next year? And that's an open question. As long as you have this coach situation and the unknown with the players who are going to be coming back next year, if any of them come back next year, depends. It's an interesting dynamic, but, you know, of course, going to pull for Rapids 2, Rapids 1. Hopefully they can dodge the Wooden Spoon. We'll see.
Yeah. I'll make one last prediction for this week, Eric. I will say that we have three instances of players who we would normally associate with Rapids 2 being somewhere in the lineup this week. I would not include Abe Rodriguez in that conversation because at this point with William Yarbrough still not back from his injury, they have to have a backup goalkeeper. If they're going to have one, it is going to be Abe Rod. So removing that, and this could be a Rapids homegrown who already very easily could be on the bench, or it could be like one of the call-ups that I mentioned earlier that the club's already exhausted for a Yosuke Hanya or a Marlon Vargas. I think we will see three instances of players like that, an Abubakar Keita, a Mike Edwards, a Remy Cabral, one of those players, a Jackson Travis. We'll see three instances of those players throughout this week being in the lineup. I will say that we do not see any of those start at this point as well, however. So that's kind of my prediction that I have it there. That's maybe a little bit counter to you, Eric, of saying, you know, let them focus on trying to win their MLS Next Pro title. I think that does it for us, Eric. We're a little over an hour at this point, and you got to get back to work, and I got to watch my fantasy football team lose with the two Monday night games going on right now. Anything else you want to say, or shall we get out of here?
No, it's first of all, I want to say thank you so much for the opportunity to join this wonderful podcast. I've had a great time. It's fun to talk. This is probably the least profanity-driven statements I've had in probably about a month or two, so. Anybody who's around me outside of professional runs, sorry, I let the language fly, and that's just who I am. So But yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and it's interesting to actually sit and talking in a professional way about what our club is doing versus sitting at a tailgate drinking beer and, you know, having a good time with your friends and your loved ones. So
yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for joining, Eric. Listeners, I hope the audio quality is okay. We've got Eric here on FaceTime, so it's the Babiak setup with here, me being in the closet and then recording off of my phone and then talking on the laptop since Zoom was not cooperating. Technology is going to do technology things, unfortunately. But listeners, follow us on social media, at Rapids96Podcast on Twitter. And I can officially confirm we are getting on Threads and on Blue Sky just in case Elon decides to do something in the next 48 hours that completely kills the X-Bird app in that regard. Email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. Eric, do we know? I think Blue Sky and Threads both have hashtags and those being allowed. So you can send us those on those platforms as opposed to just on Twitter. That's available to you. And then check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. I have not spoken to Mark because obviously he is in his rabbi cave doing Jew things. And so I do not know the status of the final three pint glasses that are available. But if somehow they're available and you sign up like right now, you'll get one of the final ones that we have. And once they're gone, they're gone until we decide to make more next year as well. So yeah, head on over to holdingthehighline.substack.com. Check out Mark's written work there. And then also that's where you can support us. $42 gets you 12 months of support for that, and then gets you the pint class while they are still in stock. Thank you very much for listening to HTHL this week, listeners, and we'll see you next week. Hopefully after some, at least some good things to feel about the Rapids, regardless of how the results go. We'll see you then.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.